All right, everybody. Then we're going to get to coaching. Was just recording one of the August 365s. We are going to be in the month of August doing a real deep dive into stopping at enough, because to me, that is the basic that we will work on for the rest of our life. It is the reason why, and I was just talking about it inside of the 365, that stopping is enough, I think, is one of the things that we'll always work on, is because part of it is momentum eating. I think it's why it's usually the hardest basic of all. It's because it's the one basic that we have to get good at. Like, it's a stopping thing. So if you just think about how life works, and I use this example in the recording, a lot of times hunger is easier to wait for because you actually have to do something to make that happen. So I have many a time been laying in bed and I've gotten hungry and I've not just immediately sprinted to the kitchen. I have sat there and been like, oh, I'm so comfortable. I don't want to get up and go make me something to eat. Like, my brain is like, you're really comfortable right now. And until my hunger gets more uncomfortable than laying in the bed, I'm not necessarily motivated to go eat. Because the way that things work, we do not like having to take action as humans. Humans just don't want to take action by nature. We come up with, our brain will throw up excuses and stuff. It's always trying to conserve our energy, even if taking the action is good for us. But with enough, if you think about it, you're already eating. So now you're having to stop. So once something's in motion, it's always harder to stop it. It's like it's a lot easier to get a kid swinging. You just give them a couple of pushes and they get going. It's a lot, if they're in a full swing, it's a lot harder to slow it down. So, enough is one of those things where I think if you, like, for a lot of us, we have a lot of shame around not stopping at enough and we think we must be broken. We think of like all these things. I think the first thing to really recognize is that this is not a shameful thing. This is just, it will be the challenging basic because we have to get really good at stopping in action and changing the natural rhythm that we eat. Like, there's so many just behavioral things that have to change before we even really get to all of the emotional shit that has to change too. So it's just got a combination of a lot of stuff. So we're going to really deep dive on it. I've been listening to a couple of podcasts that talk about, there's one that I'm wanting to include in this month where there's, I was just listening to this podcast on brain science, and it was talking about how we like I know what to do, and then there's like, like I know what to do, and then there's the action of doing it. But in between those things are like two different functions of your brain. The reward system is at play, and then there's kind of like just the habit part of the brain that also has to happen. And like when you, the way the guy was explaining it, which I actually marked the podcast to listen to two or three times and to take notes because I really want to understand the concept. But it was like, oh, this makes sense. This is why that actually is harder. It's not that we're stupid. It's like, well, I know what to do. Why am I not doing it? It's like, oh, okay, well, here are the reasons why. The brain separates things this way. And then you've got to be able to trigger this and you got to be able to trigger that. Like, the only way to get to knowing something new to actually doing it is these two systems in the middle. They also have to happen or you won't do them. So it's not that you're lazy or unmotivated, undisciplined, lacking willpower. It's like, what I want to do is I want to figure that out. And then I want to make sure that everything that I'm teaching you has those two things built in too. So anyway. Corinne, just a learning while she's showering and doing all the things this morning. So, all right. And I promise, I moved my laptop to the side because I was recording with my laptop in front of me and I stone cold looked butt ass naked. All right. So I'm bringing Coach Ashley up and then Annette wants to get coached. If you want to get coached, you just need to raise your hand, everyone. We'll be rocking and rolling. And we'll turn on the gallery view and we're gonna hide. Let's see. Well, it says that, yeah, it's hidden. Okay. All right. So, Annette, where are you at? You gotta turn your camera on or the, it will not allow you to come up. Okay. All right, Annette. What you want coaching on today?
Hey, Corinne, so good to be here with you. I just knew I wanted to get coached today. I've been in this membership for on and off since the pandemic, and I love it. I think you're great. Here's where I'm having issues, and it's a mindset thing because of my history of weight loss. So, years ago, I was in a 12-step program. For people who are compulsive overeaters, I had to weigh my food, measure it, call it into my sponsor, had to say this, and go to meetings. I was a genius at it. But that mindset is stuck. And so what I found, like with no BS over the years, and I've lost weight with no BS, thank God, of pulling myself out of the old shitty, as you say. Of not eating this, not eating that, always looking after what I'm weighing and measuring. But my issue is the around sugar and that mindset around I know I could lose more weight if I just left it completely out of my diet or my food. Luckily, I've managed to cut it. With the eating when I'm hungry and stopping when I'm full. So I don't necessarily have to eat a whole slice of cake. But that mindset, even if I have a spoonful, is telling me, like, why are you doing that, Annette? You know better. You know better than to just have that because you could just lose all the rest of the 30 pounds if you just stop eating it. But I know that that's a shitty thought. So I want some
It's
coaching
really a
around that.
shitty thought. Why do you think it's a shitty thought versus just an automatic thought?
Because of how it makes me feel after, I think about it, like you should be doing this. You know better. You know what to do. Why can't you just do it? And which
But you are
causes
doing
me
it.
anxiety. Yeah.
I mean, like the example you gave me is. You're eating a slice of cake. You used to have to finish it. Now you don't. But your
Right.
brain kind of comes in and it says,
I
like,
shouldn't
all
have it anyway.
I
Why did
shouldn't
you
have.
bother?
What do you say back to it? Why are you letting it make you mad and upset you versus just talking with it?
That's a good question. That's the million-dollar question. I think it's because of the years of, like, if you ate something like that, you'd
Now
send you back.
let me show you. You're giving me the
Okay.
reason why the voice is coming up. You're not telling me why you're not befriending the voice, calming it down, reprogramming it. It's just like when you first joined that program, I am pretty sure there were old shitties then that was like, oh my God, they're taking everything away from you. This is so unfair. You shouldn't have to do this. Like, I would bet you had like a host of that. And then while they're teaching you something new, you're like, no, like, this is the answer. This is what we should do. Like, this is going to save us. Like, whatever it is that you convinced that voice, like, you created safety for the voice that said, we should keep eating our fucking face off and blah, blah, blah. And you convinced it probably by telling it over and over again, this is going to change our life. Just telling you right now. These 12 steps, like, thank God we're doing this. Like, I'm sure you had like rock solid reasons. The same thing where now we're just like, you have just decided at this point in life, I don't want that. I want to do it this way. And so now that voice is coming up. Let's get really curious about it. Okay. Let's not assume it's old shitty. Like, it feels like old shitty, but.
You know what it comes up is that it happened for me so quickly that way I lost like 45 pounds in 6 months. It was just boom. It just my body just like, yeah, this way. Without having depriving myself and just giving myself permission and having the parameters around eating when I'm hungry, not and stopping at enough, it's not happening as fast. So my brain goes into, you know what to do because it can do, you could do it so
Exactly.
fast.
Right. It's not lying to you at all. The only problem that is happening is you are freaking out because you have the voice instead of understanding why it's there and offering it a more complete story. So there's like two parts that we have here. I'm going to start with part two, and then I want to go back to this question, which is I want us to figure out what is the deeper intention behind the voice. Every shitty voice that we have in our head that's like critical and all this other stuff, if you sit down and you actually talk about it and you really let it tell you, well, this is why I keep telling you this. It's always a good reason. And unless you calm it down, that reason can still be met this way, it's never going to quiet. It's never going to go away because it thinks we're in danger all the time. So the first part, though, for this is now I forgot what my two parts were. So well, let's just do that and then I'm sure I'll come to the other. So let's just look at the voice. It is telling you should do better, blah, 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 blah. Oh, I remember my part one was. Let me write this down. Y'all, I am so menopausal. It is for real. I'm like a poster child for an advertisement for forgetting things.
Oh, and mine is for sweating. So,
Yeah, I do that. Well, this is why I'm wearing such a hoochie top today, because I'm just like, tits have to breathe.
you look good. You
Well,
look
thanks. I
good.
appreciate it, but I'm just like, we gotta go tube top today because I've been hot since I got up this morning.
Sweating.
Oh, all right. So let's talk to the voice. And let's imagine, you know how I don't have him anymore. My cat's actually destroyed my old shitty. But he used to have a little old shitty. And he had a happy face. But his happy face represents shit that makes us feel bad. So I always loved that analogy of the poop emoji because it really shows us that our most critical thoughts underneath it are just a cute, lovable little creature who's trying to like literally protect us from something. So when old shitty's yelling at you and saying like, "Oh my God, girl, if you would just go back to what you were doing, we'd be losing weight so much faster. Like, oh my God, I just don't think this is the way. It's so fucking slow, blah, blah, blah." Let's ask that. Like, why do you want me to know this information? What is your like good reason for telling me this in the way that you do?
Ooh, that's a good one. That hits some deep shit right
Well,
there.
just take a guess.
If you know, if you thought you were, it's like you, it's like it's yelling at me. It's
Yeah,
just
but it's
yelling.
yelling. But why does it want your attention so bad? Like, it's like, please pay attention to me because it's not that I want you to do it this way. It's because I'm worried that if you don't do it this way, this is going to happen. What is that?
You know, it's probably just my health and just getting older. And, you know, if you stopped eating the sugar in it, like you wouldn't have the pre-diabetes, you know, you wouldn't, you'd actually be healthier. You know what to do to bring those numbers down. And it's
Oh.
almost like I don't want to do it. Do I want to?
So that's probably a rock solid thing that your brain is doing then. Because could you imagine if your brain was like, you know what? You should totally do it. You should totally just eat all the sugar. I mean, it's what you want. Fuck that diabetes. I mean, what is the benefit of living past 70? Nothing. Could you imagine if your brain just suddenly started doing, you'd be like, well, I guess I'm happier. But you're not yelling at me, but you're also saying, who gives a shit? We'll make it to 70. We won't even need to draw Social Security.
Mm.
So it's
That's
just worried that the way that you're doing it is somehow killing you. So it is like, and if it thinks you're dying, I mean, if you think about the way that, like, the underlying message is, I think you're killing yourself. I'm pretty sure that the way that you're doing this, you're actually killing yourself. It's just yelling at you in the language it knows, which is diet rules. The things that, like, it knows that weight loss is highly motivating. It's like, tell her she can't lose weight doing it this way because that'll get her to pay attention. She's always focused on her fucking weight. Like, just think about the, it's like so desperate to feel like the way that you're doing it right now is safe. And you're just going, you're an old shitty. You shouldn't be here. In fact, you make me anxious. And it's like, well, I don't feel no better. Like, old shitty is just like, you can yell at me all you want, and I'm gonna yell at you all I want because you're killing us. Now, this is where we come to part, the first part that I was thinking about. And that is, now that we kind of know, it's just afraid that what you're doing is not safe. I don't think it has as near as much to do with it won't work. Because one of the things that you're going to need to do is you're going to have to actually start talking to this voice, not yell back at it. Like, I don't like you yelling at me. And it's like, well, fuck, you're yelling at me too. So we're just both going to yell and see who wins. Our inner self will win the argument every time. That's why I always tell you have to actually dialogue. So now that we know what it's afraid of, now is when you start calming that part of you down. What does that part of you that's afraid that you're going to aggravate your sugars, your type 2 diabetes, maybe not lose weight as fast as you would if you just cut it all out? What do you want to tell that version, knowing that it's actually just scared?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is like giving myself some grace and some patience, and just like believing in myself that I can take care of myself and I won't do things to harm myself.
That's what that voice needs to hear. Not so much the grace, it's the sentence you just said. I promise we're not going to do things that harm ourselves. And then really, like, and I know some of y'all think I'm smoking crack when I say do this, but really have to talk to it and say, and here's how I know this is safer than the way we did it. And you go back and you talk to it about the parts it's not remembering. Because if it feels like you're dying, it's only going to remind you of the highlight reel. Isn't like, because you already said the reason why you're doing it this way is because there was a lot that you didn't even like about it. Like, I had to do this, I had to do this, and it was exhausting. And it was probably killing you slowly in a different way.
That's why I
But it was
left.
more. Yeah, but it was like more emotional and mental, and I'm not even sure what else, but I'm sure it was taxing, you know. So that's why we have to like really listen to old shitty. Y'all always are real quick to want to change him instead of understand. Why are you here? What do you need me to understand? What are you afraid of? And I always love the question of like, I understand what you're saying. So you're telling me this because you're really secretly afraid of what? And that's a question that gets to the heart of everything. So for you, it's really reassuring it like, I'm not going to do anything that harms us. And maybe showing yourself on paper daily, here are the ways that I actually am working on my prediabetes. Here are things I'm doing that will help these numbers. And it will get you solving that root core problem that I think the voice is really most worried about.
That hits home.
Okay.
That really hits home.
Well, good. It's more journaling, as always. The answer is always somehow in a journal.
Yeah. But it's, as you said, it's asking it the right questions and it's sticking with it while I'm doing this and just giving it a voice, letting it talk versus like, I'm going to fight you every day. No, I'm doing it this way. Okay, it's new, but I'm doing it. I don't like, Yeah.
And like,
This
you should go
is,
away. And it's like, I
yeah.
can't go away. I'm trying to save your fucking life. And you're like, no, don't do that. Whatever you do, don't do that. I
Right.
think that's where the anxiety's coming from. It's not what the voice is telling you, it's that y'all are arguing and you're getting anxious because your body knows it feels unsafe and you're not addressing it. And that will always make you live on the edge. Okay.
Fabulous. Thank you,
All right. Thank
Corinne.
you. All
Well,
righty.
bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Y'all want coaching? You better raise your hand. Geraldine's the only one with her hand raised. I'm telling y'all, Green got things to do. I got all kinds of 365s to record. Got a long list of things to do on a Sunday afternoon. I'm in this call real early if y'all don't need help. All right. What you need help with, Geraldine?
Last, so I need help on 5 week vacation I'm taking. And I got coached, I think whatever, like earlier this week, Thursday, and my assignment was, I was kind of like freaking out about it. And my assignment was go write about all the things I'm freaking out about this trip, so that I can see what my brain is offering me, which I did, and it was great. And the long and short of it is, so there, so I'm leaving my home environment where I have, in air quotes, control of some things. I have a scale and I have the food that I eat and the grocery store that I go to, and like the things that I know for how to keep myself kind of on track. And okay, so like my brain is, there's a bunch of thoughts. Let me just dump them out and then we'll get them organized. So I think I have this sense of some amount of control, except for the results that I get when I'm at home aren't necessarily the ones that I want. And I'm pa like panicking because I'm going to France for 5 weeks and it's family and my mom with all my food issues around my mom and the judgment. And I can feel like the oh shit anxiety kicking up. What am I going
What
to do?
are
And
you going to do?
I'm scared I'm going to eat my fucking face off.
Okay, well, that's one option.
It is one option, and I'm not going to.
Then why are you scared?
I'm scared because I think the scale is going to go up while I'm gone,
It
which is
probably
like
will. I mean, if you
certain
fly
death.
across the ocean, the scale has to go up. There's just different
So.
altitudes over there, number one. Like, I need y'all to really hear this. I'm so scared the scale's going to go up. It's like, well, then prepare to feel like ass because when you go to France and back and you travel with different barometric pressure, different altitudes, all the like, and just, I would bet you when I fly to Las Vegas, if I could weigh when I get there between the day I leave and the next morning, I'm usually going to be up 3 or 4 pounds. Just water retention, if nothing else, from being in an airplane where it's drier.
I
So
mean,
I
there's the
don't
whole
know
like
that you're
there's that
scared
whole
that the
airplane
scale's going to
piece.
go up. Like, let's think about what you're really scared of.
That it's hopeless.
What's hopeless?
No matter how hard I try, I can't get to the weight I want to be at.
How much more weight you got to lose?
It depends on the day, but 10 pounds.
So you need to lose 10 pounds and you're scared to death. And how much have you lost?
None. As of this morning, I'm up 4.
Okay. You're up 4 right now. But since you joined the program, you've lost no weight. You've always needed to lose 10 pounds, or have you had like weight loss? I mean, like kind of, I don't know your history.
Yeah, so like let's see. The rate, like it historic, well, I mean, it depends on how far you want to go back, but like in recent history, in the last couple of years, it hangs out between like 137 and 142, and like all things being real, that's a totally normal and healthy range for me. But I'd like to get down to 134. And
So
then
you want
this
to weigh
morning it was,
134.
yeah, and this
Okay.
morning it was 145. And
Okay.
I know for sure the work that I'm doing in here is the where I need to be, right? I've done Lose It and Noom and counted calories and like walked up to Everest Base Camp, and like you can't do that every day. It's just not sustainable. I'm running a marathon right now. That's great.
How tall are you?
5'9".
5'9".
Yeah.
Man, you want to weigh less than I do.
I have no sense. I don't know how tall you are, and I have no sense for
Five, I'm
comparing that.
5'5¾". Used to be 5'6".
Yeah. Right. I know. Shrinking.
Shrunk just a little bit. I was
I'm
so
5'9" if I've
devastated
done
when I went to
yoga.
the doctor. I was like,
Right.
what?
Yeah. So I mean, like I'm athletic and I do endurancey kind of things, and I still have my food obsessions, and there's
Okay,
some
so what is the
perfectionist thing
real
going.
problem in your life? Is it at 5'9"? What did you say your ideal weight was? You wanted to weigh what?
134.
All right. Let's just say we're going to get there, and you're 145 now. Okay. If I could wave a magic wand and you got to fix one fucking thing in your life, only one, and everything else had to stay exactly as it is now, what would you pick?
Stop being scared of food.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a really hard assignment. But this is where your life will get better, faster. You've got to stop trying to lose weight as your focus. You have got to put all your energy and effort on how am I going to become someone comfortable with food? Because if that is your one dying wish that you have, like the one thing I'd fix in my life is I would not have all of this fear around food, and we could fix that. What would your life be like? Like, tell me all the things that would change if you just weren't afraid of food. And let's make a really good list about that.
Hold on, I just gotta pull myself back.
You're okay. Do you want to take a minute to just, we got time.
There's nobody
Ready
else
up.
around. I could go
I
cry for a
know.
minute. No, I could pull myself back. Let's see. It would feel good. I'll have a good, healthy cry after. Okay, so the question was, what would be different in my life if I could stop feeling afraid of food?
Yeah, like tell me just your the top five. We'll just do five. The top five things in my life that would change if starting today, I was never afraid of food ever again.
I would be so much happier.
Okay. Why would you be happier?
It's a lot of pressure
Okay.
that I put on
Wait a,
myself.
hang on one second. You're jammed up and frozen.
Don't know if anybody else cares about the ass. Okay, tell me when
Okay,
I'm
now
back.
going. Okay, I got happier, less pressure.
Okay. I said nobody else cares about the size of my ass. I don't think the size of my ass is a problem for anybody else
What's that
except for
have to
me.
do with not being afraid of food?
I think, well, food and size of ass are like correlated in my mind. So I'm afraid of making my ass bigger, I suppose, is the connection. Like that's the worst possible. Not I don't want to say that's the worst possible thing, but like that's the thing I
Well,
don't
let me
want to
ask
get bigger, and I'm
you.
afraid of making myself bigger.
Okay. And so all of this food pressure that you're doing right now is causing you to probably binge or overeat.
Emotionally, yeah.
Yeah. So you would see a reduction in emotional eating.
Yeah, I just wouldn't have food associated with like hooked to so many emotions. would just be neutral. It would just be like, am I hungry? Yes, eat. Am I hungry? No, don't eat. Am I
Well,
full?
let's question
Stop
that.
eating. Yes,
I
stop
don't
eating.
know that when you aren't afraid of food, that doesn't mean that you go to neutral. I think you actually love food more. You enjoy food more. You appreciate food more. You see moments when you want to emotionally eat, because I think we get this idea in our head that emotional eating is like a good or bad thing. Or like it's just a bad thing. I think most of you think emotional eating equals bad. And emotional eating, the only way we know whether or not it's having a positive or negative consequence in our life is by like what's happening, the reasons why behind it. So like I do a lot of emotional eating on vacation, but I'm not doing it because I'm miserable and I'm afraid of food and I'm pissed at Chris and I'm worried what people are thinking. It's like we have been planning the restaurants we're going to go to and what we're going to get at each one because I've tried the food and I love it and I'm like I cannot wait. Like there's one place in all of America that I can get this one banana tartine and it's an experience. But it's a very planned experience from I deserve pleasure with food. Now you're going to France and scared out of your mind because in your mind it's like you're not trying to plan the pleasurable stuff. You're trying to guard against getting pissed at your mother and eating your face off and gaining more weight. That's a lot of pressure.
Yes. Yeah, just controlling it all. Just controlling from all angles.
Yeah, I think when it comes to this trip for France, if you really want to have like no more fear of food, then stop working on how you're going to lose weight in France and start working on how am I going to handle my mother in new ways so that I can eat things I actually love while I'm there, so that the basics can be easy and implementable. I never need a scale when I travel. I don't need to know where we're going to eat in order to have a good relationship with food. Like for me, I now have such a good relationship with food. You can take me anywhere in the world and make me fly blind the entire time. Never tell me when or where we are eating, and I can navigate it. Because I'm not freaking out by, like, oh my God, I don't know how much I weigh today. Oh my God, I don't know where we're going today. Oh my God, I'm just waiting for someone to piss me off, judge me. Like, I'm worried what everybody's thinking. I'm not doing that all the time. I like literally go and I'm just like, okay. I am sure I will eat and I will be fine and I will make the majority of the choices will be probably healthier. And then in the moments when I can make a really fun choice, I bet you they're going to present themselves. That's the way I usually travel. I just like I don't I used to plan more and now I don't. But when I used to plan maniacally my vacations, it was because I had more drama in my head back then. So my plans helped me navigate away from my drama. But I worked on my drama. Like if I was going to go visit, like let's say I had to go on a trip with my father. Then back in the day, I probably would plan all my food as much as I could. Like, I would plan and control as many things as I could around that. Like, I would make sure I exercised every day because I would know at least that would be an hour not with him, number one. Number two, moving my body would give space for more negative emotion. Then, to just like getting out some anxiety allows for more anxiety to come in. Rather than I'm anxious, I didn't move my body, and now I got more anxiety because, daddy's triggering me. And it's just kind of dogpiling on top of each other. So we just have to think about, like, in terms of this trip, if one of your biggest goals in life is to stop being afraid of food, then we should plan this trip around how you're going to handle your mom. What parts of the trip, like, are you going to have stress releases? What parts of your mother can you let go of and just be like, I just don't get upset about that anymore?
So the thing running in the back of my mind, the word maniacal is how it feels over here. But the other thing is the irony of this is, so I was in France for 5 weeks last fall with my mom. And fuck if I came home 5 pounds lighter.
Okay.
And I'm just
Why do
like,
you think that won't happen this time?
habit thinking.
Okay, then that's all we need to remind our brain. If that's really all that's happening, is that you're very used to being afraid of weight gain, then you're just like Annette. You've got to go in because that part of your brain that is like, so afraid we're going to gain weight. I'm so afraid we're going to gain weight. I'm so afraid we're going to gain weight. It's just really afraid. It's like, and because to you, weight gain has a lot to do with, I'm pretty sure if you're like most women, you've got so much of your self-worth tied up into how much you weigh. So if you gain weight, you lose what you find worthy in you. If you don't lose the weight, you don't get to feel worthy. It's deeper than just a scale.
No, it's totally about self-worth and lovability as a human.
Why are you not lovable now? Or what is it that, let's say I could just chop off 11 pounds today and you were at 134. In your mind, what is this imaginary conversation having? Like, what is changing when it comes to your self-worth and stuff?
Feels like acceptance into the club.
What club?
The club of family of so on that side of my family, on the French side, it's like five aunties and 30 cousins and the glamour and the bubble glasses and the silk scarves and the skinniness and the smoking cigarettes and like the whole elegance thing. And this is super old. Definitely not checking those boxes because I was a tomboy. And I came home every day with grass stains and on my pants from, playing with the boys and everything. And this feels like an old story. I don't know if this is, you tell me if this is useful or not, but just feeling like I was not accepted and not part of not being the way that I was supposed to be.
So if you went back to France right now, 10 pounds smaller, they would all embrace you and say, finally, you're exactly
In
the way
my
you should.
mind, in my mind, yes. In
But
truth,
now I
they
want to
already
ask
do
you, is
that.
that going to actually happen? I know what your mind is telling you, but that our mind is full of stories. Sometimes we have to, we need to know what's actually, because if the case is that you walk in the door and your mother's like, oh my God, you lost 10 pounds. Like, we have all been waiting for this moment. Put on a scarf and let's go smoke. Like, if that is actually true and going to happen, we have to recognize that because now we have to actually do some work around, all right, that's their expectations and stuff like that. But if that's not going to happen, it's always just good to know that my brain thinks I'm going to get what I finally want, which is love and acceptance from my family. And I've tied it to how much I weigh. But if you lost 10 pounds and they still are going to talk to you the same way, like they're really not going to change anything. They're not really going to notice, other than maybe like, did you lose weight or whatever? It's just good for you because now you've got to talk to that part of your brain that's freaking out. And you say, like, look, I kind of know my family. It doesn't matter what we weigh, they're going to talk to me the same way. They're really not going to change just because I lose weight. So if, at least we can calm that part of us down And then move on to the next part of us that's going to be freaking out. Because when we talk about, I just don't want to be afraid of food anymore, I think you're afraid of food simply because you've got it tied to, I will be loved and accepted if I lose weight. And in your mind, it's like, okay, food is a villain. It's standing between me and love and acceptance.
All those things are what you said. Food, I have food positioned as the villain. I think that nobody is going to notice or care really. They're not nearly as perhaps outwardly judgmental as I have made them out to be, or my brain has made them out to be. They will be delighted to see me no matter what I weigh. They don't give a shit, probably. And the whole bubble glasses and scarves thing is like not a real thing. Like that's just what my mind has made up.
Good for you to say to yourself that my family loves and actually does accept me. I'm the one not doing that. Like, it's just to be super clear with yourself. It's a lot easy to make other people the villain rather than just taking responsibility for the part that, because the one thing you
Totally.
said is you just want control. This you have total control over. You have a control over saying to yourself, they already love me. They just thought I was a tomboy when I was a kid. And I thought that meant they didn't love me. It just meant they thought I was a tomboy. And I've spent my entire life, like, kind of building this whole, like, and this is what our brains do as children, because the part of our brain that we're using right now, where we are using the front logical part, and we're looking back at time, and we're kind of looking at how we're thinking and stuff, and we're parsing it through and figuring it out, was not online then. It doesn't even fully form until you're 26. This is why so many people stay mad at their kids when they're like between the ages of like 8 and 18, because they think their kids, like, I've told you this a million times, their logical brain isn't fully formed. So you probably do have to tell them a million times to do things because they don't remember it. It is not part of their brain's wiring. Like, it needs constant prodding. And then parents just swear to God they're being disrespected and not loved. And, you know, my God. It's like you could save yourself a lot of heartache. These kids aren't equipped. Period. So I think parsing that out. Like, I just want you to think about the difference between the story you walked in with is like, oh my God, I'm gonna be, you basically said, I'm spending 5 weeks in France with my mother, and I'm afraid I'm gonna eat my face off and gain weight. And now I just want you to hear this story that we just came up with. I'm gonna spend 5 weeks in France with my mother, who loves and accepts me at the weight I'm at. Now what? And I'm going to be presented with 5 weeks of food choices, just like last year, where I actually lost 5 pounds. How does that feel compared to your original story?
I want to go even one step further and say, like, whether my mother loves and accepts me at the weight I'm at may or may not be true. Love probably accepted the weight I'm at, maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But I can't stop having this, like, whatever she thinks, be my life. Right? Like,
What do you know 100% from your mother's mouth that she thinks of you currently today? That she's actually said, like, we need to know
I don't have
what she has
nothing.
verbalized.
She has said nothing.
You
Like I
never
don't have
talk
any
about it.
words. We've never talked about my weight. No. Not, I mean, not
So as
since I was
far as
like
you know,
14.
she loves and accepts your weight. If she's not been saying, you know, Geraldine, you're kind of a you
Those
should
things
lose
were
10 pounds.
things like that were said when I was in my teenage years.
Right. But what is she saying now about Geraldine?
Nothing.
Could we just do this and see how this feels? That when you were a teenager, Your mother may have grown and evolved, or just doesn't care as much as she did about your weight as when you were a teenager.
Yeah.
Because I think almost all moms really care about our weight when we're in our teen years, simply because they like there's like two big factors that come into play. We are not very far removed from the generations of women who, unless they were really thin, couldn't marry well. And if you couldn't marry well, you couldn't have a house, a checking account. Like you couldn't support yourself. Like you were put into very dangerous situations. I'm not sure what it's like in France, but in the States, I don't think it was until either 72 or 74 a woman could get her own checking account.
Yeah, my mom had to go to the bank with my dad for that.
Yes, exactly. So it's not like, so like, and her mother was probably taught, oh my God, you have to marry if you want to have any stability. And you have to look a certain way, or no man's going to pay attention to you. The way we looked for generations was very tied to our physical safety. So this is, it's a large topic, but it's called generational trauma.
And
Like,
just to your point, my mom got a letter from her dad and she was 26, and he's like, "You aren't married yet, and I'm concerned about you."
right. Because
Like the
it's
thing.
back then, you really did need a man to take care of you because the government wouldn't allow you to take care of you. You know, nowadays we're like, you know, what the fuck? What is all these women so worried about a man taking care of them? It's like, because we got fucking rights now that we used to not have. Like, it's easy for us to say that now. If I want a credit card, I'm gonna go down the street and get me one. Back then, I better hope that my daddy or my husband would go with me.
And
So,
with my dad, it wasn't a guarantee because he came from like way, but So
yeah.
yeah,
Well,
like
so
it's
this is
so it's
why,
we're not
like,
far
one
removed.
thing we want to recognize is that when we are teenagers, our mothers are just kind of passing down those same lessons that started in fear. But they take generations to remove from the ecosystem.
It's like a money story that's just like three generations back. It's a body
Yeah, it's just
story.
like even my niece. I mean, she's like 23. And we like I will talk to, I hope my brother ain't watching this, but I will talk to like my sister-in-law. And I can't tell you how often I have said, we really need to teach Lexi to make her own money. And it, but you know, in my sister-in-law's mind, it's like, well, but I really want her to marry someone that'll take care of her. And I'm like, I don't know. I think we should like teach her to take care of herself. And if she gets a partner who wants to care for her, that's amazing. But it shouldn't be part of the criteria. Like, I want her to feel like she can take care of herself. So there's that. And then also just societal pressure when we're teenagers. Our parents know that if we're chubby, we don't have it as easy. And they get on to us about our weight. It's like their old shitty is lose weight when their old shitty on the inside is saying, I just don't want you to not be part of the popular kids. Like, I know
I don't
how
want you to
awful
get
it
teased and
feels.
bullied.
Yeah, like I know how awful it is to feel like you don't fit in, but it comes out as, well, what can we control? Lose weight. We can control that. So maybe we just assume, since your mother's not commenting on your weight, that at, I'm not sure how old you are, but at this age,
49.
all right, at 49, she feels like it's your vanity 10 is not like the end of the world.
My vanity 10, what's that?
Your weight. I'm gonna tell you right now, Geraldine, at 5'9", weighing what you weigh, you are saucy, sexy, you're all the things. You and I weigh the same, and I'm 3 inches shorter than you, and I think I'm a fucking beast. Oh, I'm just gonna say, like, I just want you to know that, and it's fine if it's vanity. There's nothing wrong with that. Corinne is a very vain individual. That is why I get all the Botox and stuff. It's not life-threatening. It feels scary to not get your 10 pounds, but it's distracting you from the core problem in your life, which is I am terrified of food because I gave you the option to weigh 134 for the rest of your life and you didn't pick it.
I didn't.
Nope, you picked, I don't want to be afraid of food and started crying. So you need to hear that 134 pounds is not actually the biggest problem you're trying to solve right now.
It's not. It's food as a weapon. It's food as villain.
That's why I was like, what if you stopped trying to lose weight? And what that means, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't lose weight. That's why I was asking you, like, what would all the things that would happen if you had a really lovely relationship with food? You could figure out how every time you got the anxiety, you got the fear and stuff, how to talk to yourself, calm yourself down, understand why you're so afraid, reassure yourself in that moment, eventually to where the part of you that's so afraid of food can calm down and be like, Geraldine, I think you got the reins now. Like, I really believe there's nothing dangerous about eating anymore. I think you actually have this. It could take a break. You'd cut out your emotional eating. And if like you need to lose 10 pounds, it would come off naturally. But usually what I see is either the weight comes down or when you get what you finally want, which is that amazing relationship with food, you don't even feel like you need to lose it anymore because you're trying to control food in order just to get that.
Yes, totally. Trying to get in the back door.
It's like if I weighed 134, then I would have all the control around food that I think I really want. It's like I think
Yes.
you weigh 134 and be afraid you're going to get back to 145. I don't think
100%.
that getting to 134 is going to help you heal your relationship with food. Now, for some of you, we do this work. Like when you've got more weight to lose, this isn't, I don't want every single person here to hear me say this and think that then that's what I have to do. And it's not to say you shouldn't, but this is like for her, it's the house on fire emergency. It's all this fear and anxiety you're living on, and it's driving you to eat more, which then drives you to fear food even more.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. And the 134 just feels like, do you remember the pressure cookers from the old days where you would like screw down the lid and then crank up the heat? It feels like it would be a that kind of situation where outwardly I would have made the measurement, but inwardly I would just be in that much more of a panic about losing it all, losing control. And like, I'm
Yeah.
not going to be able to stay here. And like, it would just.
It's because to lose 10 pounds, you do not have to change your relationship with food.
What do you mean?
All of us have done diets where we didn't change our relationship with food at all.
Oh,
Just got
okay.
really good at stopping at enough. And like, so one way to stop at enough is to be like, okay. This feels so much better in my body. I'm so glad I'm listening to myself now. And, you know, I just discovered the reason why I want to keep eating is because I'm going to have to I'm going to have to start my chores again when I'm done eating. And so that person is like, you know what? I'm going to stop it enough and I'm not going to do the chores. And I'm going to be uncomfortable with that. And then create safety around it, being okay that I'm not super productive at night and blah, blah, blah. That's one way to stop it enough. Here's the way to stop it enough to lose 10 pounds and be miserable at the end. You shouldn't eat anymore. You have to
Yeah.
stop. I don't care what you're afraid of.
Definitely.
We're not doing it because we're going to fucking France. And I bet when we get to France, we're going to gain more weight. So you need to eat less right now. And then you like stop it because you're just
Right.
making yourself, and then you go and you distract yourself for 3 hours and thinking like, oh my God, I got all these cravings and urges. It's like, if I could just knock myself, I'm either taking Benadryl or I'm going to do some projects until I go to bed. Like
Totally. Yes.
now,
Yeah.
both people will stop it enough and lose weight. One person is fixing their life. The other person is just making themselves do it.
Yeah, like white knuckling it.
Yes. So that's why I was saying, I think for you, it's like you need to work on like every time that you're afraid of anything when it comes to food, it's like if you could just take a few breaths and say, is there anything truly to be afraid of with food right now? What do I think is fixing to happen? Is that even real, or is that just a habit thought? Just like I'm smoking scared of going to France and gaining weight when my history proves that I lose 5 pounds. It's like that, what's really going on here? It's like when I tell myself the truth, I have historical evidence that I lose weight when I go to France. My most recent history says something in me has changed with food so much so that when I go to, or with food or relationship with my mom or whatever it is, the history is showing, well, I actually lost weight, so that you can calm yourself down.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the irony is that when I don't have my, like, I'm at home with all my environment that I think I can control. When I go there, I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to listen to my body.
Why are you not listening to your body at home, though? Like, that's what I'm saying. It's like
Yeah.
you find comfort in all this control, except it keeps you stuck staying afraid of food.
Yeah, totally. Like the way that I'm doing it here in the US is like not what I want and not working. And when I'm over there, it's what I want and it works. And yet over here, I'm like, is it just habit, environment habit, like atomic habits kind of habit?
Part
Like,
of it is going to
I
be
don't know.
environmental habit. It's going to be a combination. It's
Yeah.
always scary to let go of some of our habits that we think are somehow paying off for us.
Yes, that is what it is.
That's what you need to look at, is look at the controls and shit that you've set up at home
Yep.
and really do a diagnostic of, are these actually giving me the control that I think it is? Is this actually
Yeah, they're
working?
not.
It's triggering overeating and emotional eating and driving anxiety. You need to see that and say, like, oh, okay, this is not helpful. Like, give
Yeah,
me
I'm
one
so.
environmental thing you got going on right now that.
The scale in the bathroom, the scale in the kitchen, measuring cups. Those would be the main things. What else do I have?
Well, what is the, but how, but we don't know that those are the problem. What are the, why, like, which one would you say could be a problem?
Hold on, let me get there. I think it's the obsessive weighing.
Of your body or the food?
Both, but the body more. If I had to pick one, body more than food.
Okay. So that could be one of those things where, because you even said something like, how am I going to go to France and not gain weight when I don't have my scale?
I know.
And it's
Yeah.
like you're using the scale as a way to monitor. And if we're going to solve the problem of relationship with food, I would use my habits as a way to know whether
Right.
I'm on track or not. Because your habits,
Totally.
scale doesn't influence habits. Now, what it can do is it can be like if I weigh and I'm like if I weigh in and I notice I'm up 5 pounds, then I can be like, okay, then I need to look at my habits and figure out like what foods have I introduced that maybe I'm eating them too often now? Or what are there any meals where like maybe I'm eating past enough? I'm eating to stuffed now, I'm eating to full. Like I'm just not even paying attention. And that's usually what happens with me is I'll go up about 5 pounds and I'll start looking and I'll be like, oh, well, I'm back to just cleaning my plate at night especially because we order out quite a bit. And if I clean my plate every time we order out, I know I'm overeating because restaurants are always going to give you, 2 to 3 meals. Most restaurants, not all restaurants, but the average restaurant, even if I'm ordering a salad. Like if I order from our Greek restaurant, man, that to-go box. I always look at Chris and I'm like, now how are they making money? How that thing is $14.99. There is no way that place, I mean, it will be like so much chicken on a salad. And I'm just, because I'm in the restaurant industry, and I'll just be like, I don't know how they're keeping their costs in check. They must not be. I bet you they couldn't go through a COVID. They would just be out of business just like that.
Yeah.
So that's where I usually look. But I use the scale as like, I don't need to track a lot of behaviors. And this is me in maintenance now. I don't weigh all the time, and I don't do a lot of controls all the time with food, but I weigh about usually once every couple weeks. And if I notice after 2 to 3 weigh-ins that I'm just kind of trending up, I know now to go look at my habits. I start tracking what I'm doing. I start paying attention again. And then about 6 weeks, I just notice it comes right back down because I, for lack of a better word, I get a little sloppy. And I think we all do that. We just kind of like, your old habits will always be ready to be refreshed. And then I look for any emotional eating. For me, I just don't do a lot of emotional eating anymore. I've worked through it so long now that it sticks out like a sore thumb when I'm doing it. It almost is like I've worked out for so long that when I miss a day, it's like the next day, I almost feel like a compulsion to go because I'm in such, it's like if you've didn't brush your teeth one day, the next day you would just be like Sweaterville. You just have to do it. And that's kind of the way I am with exercise now. It's like if I don't do a day, like the next day, I'm just like, I really need to go work out because I'm so used to it. And it's the same way with emotional eating. I've unwound it for so long and all the reasons that now, anytime I notice I emotional eat, it's like my brain just goes off like, what are you doing? Like, this is, we don't even eat like this anymore. Like, it's now questioning the emotional eating. Whereas before, when I took the emotional eating weight, it questioned my habits. It was like, why are we stopping at enough? This sucks.
How
Okay.
long did it take you to undo your emotional eating? You had to throw a ball at it.
I mean, probably 12 years.
Okay.
So I lost my weight in 2005, started losing weight in 2005, 2007. And I really, the last of my emotional eating, I would say, died about 2 or 3 years ago. Like, I
Okay.
don't have like the exact timeline. Like, I'm not,
Yeah.
I would
It's
love to
not
be able to tell
there's
y'all
a
that
finish line.
I somehow journal my life like a
Yeah.
documentarian, but like, I don't. But through all those years, it was just a slow unwinding of emotional eating. Like even now, the only, and I don't do emotional eating, but I really don't like wasting food. And that's probably the last domino standing. Now, I won't overeat to not waste food, but I've not gotten to the point to where when I don't eat, that I don't feel like I'm wasteful. I just know that about me. And so I'm in the stage now where I'm still working through like nothing bad has happened. It's like you're just done and we're not going to eat this. And I'm not always like, well, we're in Vegas. We waste so much food there because like I just literally can't eat and Chris can't either all the food that they will serve us. And I'm never comfortable with it. But I don't eat because I'm not comfortable with it. So,
Right.
it's just different.
Okay, that's helpful
But
because
it
I'm
just
like
takes.
3 years in over here. And at the beginning, like I was like, you think I'm crying today? Like I was a freaking wound up tight ball of yarn mat, not whatever. It's way less emotional now. So 3 years feels like it's starting to feel so much easier and so much more calm.
Yeah.
And the perspective that like it was 12 years over here is like, oh, maybe I could give myself some grace that I haven't figured this out in a year or like 6 months or whatever. I think maybe
And then,
there's some false expectation that I could unwind 40 years of emotional eating in like 6 months.
Yeah, and like I'm a good example of someone that, I mean, literally lost 100 pounds and has maintained for since 2007, and until the last 2 to 3 years, really kind of got rid of the emotional eating part of it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think y'all forget that part. It's like, oh, Corinne lost 100 pounds as an emotional eater. Corinne has kept her weight off all these years as an emotional eater, and really only got to where it's like, I just don't really do it anymore. Like I've worked through so much, not just diet rules and stuff, but I think so much of my life, like I'm constantly working on my life, like my relationships with business and money and success and like family traumas and like all the different things. Like we've been going through some shit with Logan for it feels like ever now, but I have spent a lot of time the last few weeks crying, worrying, anxiety, panicking. Where like one day he's moved out, the next day he's like back saying he wants to move back in, and then the third day he's like, "No, I think we're gonna try this." Now he's on the line of, "I'm gonna live half time there, half time here," which basically means our sex life has gone to the toilet because we never know when he's coming home anymore. So Chris was like, "I don't know how this happened. I had all these dreams that we were gonna have wild sex." The moment he left, now I'm like, we have it less. We never know when he's just gonna, because he wants to see us more when he doesn't live here. So every time he comes
Oh
home,
dear.
back to the bedroom. And I'm just like, we can't be having sex. So anyway, but I've been kind of going through it, but I've not ate over it.
Yeah.
I have felt like ass. I have journaled. I have gotten coached. I have talked to several coaches. Like I've got coach friends, just like y'all have ass coaches. I have coach friends that are like my ass coach. I have messaged with three or four of them, telling the story over and over again, getting differing opinions and different questions and stuff like that. But rather than eating over the trauma of my life, I work through the trauma of my life.
Right.
And that's why emotional eating for me just doesn't come up anymore, because my first reaction to when shit hits the fan in life is to figure out why it's happening. What am I making it mean? How can I calm myself down? How can I get clarity so I can make some decisions? How can I get clarity so that I'm not worked up all the time and that I'm actually, living the way I want to live and stuff? Like that's now my first reaction. It's my habit response to anxiety, to overwhelm, to being busy, to feeling out of control. And I don't have it with food anymore, but I have it in a lot of other areas of my life where there's just areas of my life where I just feel out of control. There's areas of my life where I feel incredibly lazy. And I wrote in my journal the other day, I just don't want to look like a loser, where I worry about what people are thinking. But my habit response now is to journal, to talk to people, to try to reason through things, to go for walks and think. And that's what
Right,
I
whereas
want for all of you.
mine would be to go straight to the kitchen.
Exactly. We're training. I just want you to think about it. We're training a new habit response. Because I think a lot of you think the only way for emotional eating to end is, I guess, somehow get to where your life doesn't have any emotional triggers anymore. That's
Yeah,
not
no.
possible. Our life will always be triggering all kinds of things continually. We want to get really to the point where you have responded to what's going on in your life so many times by going to the well of ask coaches, journaling, like thinking through things, taking breaks, putting distance between. Like when I get really triggered, like I get really upset about things. Like if I'm really scared, I will look to start a fight with Chris. And I've gotten really good at noticing when I'm really scared and I start getting angry and I start thinking, he should be doing this and he needs to do that, blah, blah, blah. My kind of like my protocol, or my now natural response is to put distance between me and him. Because the worst thing that can happen is I go to him first, because all
Right.
I'm going to do is blow up. And so
Right.
I put distance between us. So that I think that's what probably, but that took years to do. And I had so many times I still ate because I wasn't used to like going within first. I just went like to you, to the pantry first.
Yep.
And you can start that by just simply when you go to the pantry, using that as the trigger to be like, if I'm not hungry and I'm going to the pantry, I at least want to know why I'm going to the pantry. Because I want to get really good at noticing these behaviors first. Like, that's the first line of defense. You got to know, like, if I'm in the pantry after 8 o'clock at night, there's rarely ever a good reason.
There's something you said in there that was like, oh, I gotta get it back. And it was similar for the previous woman you coached. Loving the journey and being really curious, if not excited, for what I'm gonna find. Whereas what I've been is resisting the journey of what I'm gonna find. It's like I wanna shove those things in the closet. Those thoughts in the closet and be like, no, we can't know what you're saying because you're dangerous and you're purple monsters. Surely we should lock down, batten down the hatches is what it feels like, has felt like. Whereas this today feels like much more like the obstacle is the way. Go toward the thoughts, find out, like actually let them have some sunlight so I can see.
If you will make them be like they have purpose and meaning, and like they can be a steward towards the life you want, it's real easy to invite them in. It's like if someone's knocking on your door and they've got a dozen roses, and they, like, I don't even, what's a really sexy actor? It's Jason Momoa. And he's knocking on your door and he's got a dozen roses and he's just like, hey girl, you want to let that in. If you look out there and it's Freddy Krueger with, dead roses and a claw, and you think like that is your thought, you didn't go let that shit in. So when we think like what we find is somehow very shameful, I should like a lot of, there's two things that people say all the time. Number one is, if I look deep within and I find stuff, I'm going to find things out about me that are really bad. The like if I don't like one of the coaching sessions I had, this was 2019. It's the most pivotal one. I remember crying to my coach because I hated spending time with Logan. He was just at an age where all he wanted to do was talk about North Korea, Russian songs. I mean, you name the boring thing, that's all he wanted to talk about. And he didn't really have any capacity to have like back and forth communication. Like I couldn't talk about anything I liked. I had to hear, like he would talk about North Korea on a Monday, and on Tuesday we'd have the exact same conversation. And then on Wednesday it'd be the same one. And he would tell it to you as if he had never told it to you before. And I hated it. And I remember getting coached and telling my coach, I was so ashamed. I was like, my child is so sweet. I don't have problems like other people. The worst problem I have is that he wants to talk to me about North Korea. And I sat there and I cried and I just said, I am such a terrible mother because the whole time he's talking to me, all I'm thinking is, I wish you would go away so I could have some time alone. And I spent a lot of time alone. And she's like, Ren, that's called mothering. That's not something to be ashamed of. She was like, what 40-something-year-old woman in their right mind wants to listen to a teenage boy talk about North Korea? She was like, I think that you're putting a ridiculous expectation on yourself. She said, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't want to be involved in this. And she's like, but what do you do? And I said, well, I just sit there and listen. And she said, well, rather than sitting there and judging yourself, you need to tell yourself, Corinne, this is mothering. And this is probably some of the best mothering ever because you don't even want to be here for it, but you would. And I mean, in that moment, I have used this story a thousand times. I cried. I still well up when I even talk about it. It was the most powerful moment I ever had. I think it was one of the first times I really realized to not be ashamed of what I think. That's like the first reason why we don't look at things, is that we're always so concerned that our thoughts mean something terrible about us as a human. Our thoughts do not mean anything bad about us. Our brains are hyper designed to have a million and one thoughts and stories. We cannot control them, and they're not bad. They're just not. They're just collections. They deserve to be looked at. And the other side is when we look at our thoughts and we're afraid we're going to find something that somehow is going to trigger something that we're never going to recover from. And I always like to tell all of you this. I've never seen that happen ever in all the years that I have coached people. What I have seen repeatedly is people ruining their lives, never feeling the way they want in life because they're afraid to look at what is actually going on beneath the surface. Because just because you're not looking at it doesn't mean you're not eating over it. It doesn't mean that you're not doing all kinds of things in your life to try, like you're doing more damage trying not to look at it than just examining it could ever do.
Yes.
So I think when we
Yeah.
make peace with that part, those two things, you've thrown gas on the fire of wanting to work on your thinking. So we break that obstacle down, then it is a lot easier to become someone who's reflective and who like says, all right, I just want to like, if I'm in the pantry and it's late at night, I know me well enough that, one out of every 100 times I'll actually be hungry. The other 99, I probably should have, I'm guaranteeing I'm in there for a reason other than I'm hungry. It's probably I'm trying to pass the time. I just need to at least ask myself, what's going on since I'm not hungry? Understand those reasons. Because when you start understanding things and you start working through stuff, you just naturally see your emotional eating going down because you're finally listening and addressing those things.
Part of the control thing is like, I think I've been wanting to control my thoughts, except that doesn't work because you can't.
Well, we can't. It's impossible. You can't,
I
like,
know.
your
Yeah, you
brain's gonna
can't.
throw like 60,000 a day at you. And they
Yeah.
all, like, I think 59,000 of them at least are coming from the part of your brain you don't have control over.
Right.
So
And I'm
trying to
sitting here
control
trying to
those thoughts
control my
sucks.
thoughts and like, I gotta let go of that part of like wanting to control. I think I've been coming at it from a like, if I could just control my thinking so that I think, in that in a way that's lined up with the results that I want, then somehow that would work. Except for that's totally flawed because I can't control the thoughts that
Yeah,
come up.
we
And I
have
think I'm
to
so
like
scared of the thoughts that come up.
we just have to get to know the thoughts that are coming up and
Yeah.
why they're there. And then when we kind of do that work, then our brain might want to send different thoughts. If nothing else, our brain will send up the old thoughts and you will have befriended them and you'll understand why they're there and you can have the automatic response of calming yourself down because of it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just seeing that I've been afraid of my thoughts.
Yeah. So let's go back to France. Why, what do you think now about France? Now that we've had this whole big conversation, because you came in originally, like, I got a 5-week trip and I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
So now what is your thought about the 5-week trip now?
It's a gift to be curious, and it's an opportunity. And this feels scary to say this because it doesn't feel totally true, or it feels a little like, oh, but it feels like what an amazing opportunity to be sort of stripped of my usual control environment things that I do to control my environment, and thinking that I can control all myself and my outcome and all the things. Which is totally not working, which we can all see. My last one of the party to be able to see it, but anyways, What an opportunity to be able to go there and be like, okay, no, like we're taking myself out of my environment and all the things that I usually rely on that don't work. And now I get to go inside and explore and see what's there and see what I can create and also not so be so freaked out about the scale, because who cares?
Okay, now say something simpler. I think you're trying to tell me what I would want to hear and what you think should be the thought, but I just want to know your natural thought now about France. Like, I've got a
I can
5-week
do
trip
this.
coming up.
I can do this. It's gonna be fine. I'm scared. I am scared.
I think
And
that's a good thought to have. Like, there's a part of me that's scared, and that's okay.
yep.
And maybe I'm just going to try to be there for the scared part of me this trip rather than trying to control everything. How about just listen to her?
Yeah, like I can just stay present no matter what's happening. Or like, not, I don't, that's not quite it, but like, how about I just try being present instead of controlling, attempting to control all the time.
Just control what you can, and what you can't control, just say, I'm going to make the best decision I can in the moment. Because that's really all we ever really do. Like, we think we're controlling a lot of things, when in reality, we're just going into situations and we're making decisions left and right, left and right, left and right. You have to decide if you're going to get on the scale every day at your house. You think the scale is controlling things. There's like, no, what's really happening is I have to decide every day if I'm getting on it or not. And I've
Yeah,
just
the
had a
scale
lot of
controls
reasons
nothing.
why that's what I do. I would just invite you to think about this for your trip and try this on. Maybe it won't be as bad as I think. And like every single time, you're freaking out about where we're going to eat, what we're going to eat, what somebody is thinking about you, what you might be weighing, like all the things that are going to come up, just saying, maybe it's not as bad as I'm thinking. How does that feel?
A lot calmer than the usual.
It's very different than that, just like believing that all of it's true. Because if both of us had to take a wild guess after everything we've talked about on this call, rarely is anything that you've said been as bad as you've been thinking. As we went through all the stuff, like, oh, wow, wait, my mother has actually not said anything about my weight since high school. Maybe her thoughts are not as bad as I'm thinking currently. Oh my God, I'm going to gain weight on this trip. Oh, wait, maybe it won't be as bad as I'm thinking since the last trip I actually lost 5 pounds.
Yeah. It feels like I have it made out to be Wizard of Oz, giant ball of fire, terrifying thing with the monkeys flying around. And like in real reality, in real reality, it's like a little dude behind the curtain.
A
And in
bald,
real reality,
squatty
it's
dude.
like, in real reality, it's like, yeah, there are some baguettes around and there's some cheese and some saucisson, like, salami things. Like there's food around. It's good. So like it's fine.
Yeah, and just have some. And because one thing we know about you is that deep down inside, you're so afraid you're going to gain weight. You have such a crazy ass relationship with food, and you worry so much about what other people think. The likelihood of you going face down and just be like, well, you know what? I'm just going to eat all the bread now. The likelihood of that happening
Yeah,
is
it doesn't.
zero.
No, it's zero. It's
Zero.
totally. It is
Negative
zero.
zero. Yes. The likelihood of you being on edge around all of that food and stuff is high. And that's what we
Very
want to
high.
remind ourselves. It's like maybe having a piece of bread isn't as bad as I think. I won't go into a full-on baguette experience. I would would love it though if you would send a picture and you're just like, y'all look, you see this large baguette? Corinne coached me. I ate the whole thing. She broke me. Would never happen.
Well, I mean, the irony is that I can't eat gluten, like the terrible irony.
Oh, right. And then you're all worried about going over there and having a baguette. It's like, well,
I
maybe it's not as
know.
bad as I'm thinking since I can't actually eat gluten.
I know. Like, this is the crazy thing. It's like so detached from reality. It's like I can't even
That's
eat. I mean, I can
why
eat a little bit.
we have to stop being afraid of our thoughts and listen to them because they're not always based in reality.
Is so utterly detached from reality that I'm going to eat a whole, like, for starters, I don't even want to eat a whole baguette. I've like a slice is fine. I can survive a slice. I don't have celiac disease, but like, no, thank you. But meanwhile, so it's like, so my thoughts are so utterly divorced from reality. They're so exaggerated. They're just
Right.
so
That's why
beyond.
you've got to listen to them because you've been letting them get exaggerated. You've
Yeah.
been allowing them, like, they're just like, I can just make up any fucking story I want and we get exactly what we want. Like, if I freak her out about this, then she starts doing that. It's like your brain has learned that fear is a great tactic to keep your little ass in line because you've
Yeah,
never
thank you.
stopped it. You've never
Yeah.
said, oh, wait. Here's the truth. Oh, wait, it's probably not as bad as I'm thinking. We got to move to that stage. You move to that stage, I think you'll get a lot of this food freedom metrics you're wanting. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
Have
you.
a good one. All righty. Bye-bye. All right. What time is it? 11:30. Erica? I loved Wicked, the play. Okay. I went and saw it years ago. I haven't seen the movie. I still want to watch the movie. I hated that book. I don't know about y'all, but I saw that play and because I'm a big Wizard of Oz fan, always have been. Even in high school, we marched the Wizard of Oz theme my freshman year. I bought that book, was like, I am reading this. Like, I was all in. It was the worst book. I was like, that play was nothing like this book. Did not like it. All right, Erica, tell me what we're coaching on.
Hi, Corinne. So we had to move my dad into the nursing home almost a year ago. I live in the UK. My family's in the US. We came back to visit because I'm a high school librarian, so I've got the summer off. So we came to spend as much time with them as we can. He went into the hospital the first week we were here, and he's like, his physical health has really deteriorated since we saw him in December. And we were there for a visit yesterday. I thought, he was kind of, things were getting better. And then one of the nurse's aides came by and was like, hey, what can I do for you before I leave? Since he came out of the hospital, they've had him in depends. And she was like, can I get you in the bathroom and help you change before I go? And he agreed to that. We were waiting. And she came out and asked me if I could come into the bathroom with her and help her because he wasn't strong enough to even stand up on his own while she cleaned him up. And like I just keep running that scenario over and over in my head, and like I'm trying to tell myself that I showed up for my dad like a badass, and I was glad that I was there so I could help, and that I helped him, the way I could, like, and helped him to kind of like preserve his dignity as much as possible.
Well, what has you
But
upset though?
I think it's just the fact that he like is not strong enough to stand up on his own anymore.
Why is it a problem to be upset about that? Because I mean, that seems like something to definitely cry about and to be sad about. So what is the problem? I mean, it's not like you want to be like, I've waited all my life for you to lose control of your body. Like, this is great. I'm so excited. It gives me a chance to be a badass. We're supposed to not like to see the decline of our parents. So what is the problem?
I think it's probably just, I haven't experienced this before. Obviously I'm really scared that we don't have much time left with dad. I think the fact that he's already been in the hospital once this trip, and I don't know, it seems like every time I go to leave, he ends up in the hospital again, and I have to make the decision, like, do I postpone my plans? Do I stay? Do I go ahead and go?
You're not supposed to like
And in the
that.
past,
But let me just say this. Like, I don't know that the only coaching I think you need is that everything you're thinking and experiencing is right on track. Like, what are you supposed to do? Enjoy watching your father decline. Be like, you know what? Fuck it. If he has to go to the hospital, I mean, I'm on vacation. If I have to decide when I'm going home or not, it's like, you know what? I'm just gonna make a decision for me. We want to angst over that. You have a life here, and this is the could be the last part of your dad's life. We want that tension because it's not planned. It's supposed to be like no one ever dies at a convenient time. Wouldn't it be great if we could tell our parents, I've got vacation during these 3 weeks. If you could plan to expire during these 3 weeks, it'd be chef's kiss. That is not life. And it's like we think we need, like, I want you to tell me why you think you need coaching through this, other than I just think you need to realize, like, you are handling it beautifully, and part of handling it beautifully setting.
And I think my brain is also like, I'm still wanting to lose weight, and I had originally decided to just try and maintain weight, but now my brain's like, no, like, you've gained so much weight recently. And it's just trying to be like, you need to be able to do this and lose weight too. Which.
Well, you could, you know what? You probably could if you'd quit telling yourself you shouldn't be upset about this. If you're sitting there and acting like, no, I need to feel positive so I can lose weight. It's like, no, you can lose weight and feel really terrible about things. You can actually say, I'm not supposed to like seeing my dad decline. Like, this is supposed to make me cry. I'm probably having the exact experience I'm supposed to. Now you don't have to eat over it. Because you're like, I want you to think about this for all of you. If you have expectations that during a hard part of life that should be tough, that you should feel better, and your brain is like, wait a minute, well, I'm not going to feel better watching my dad decline, so let me go get some food. The goal is not to feel better while your dad during this part. Your goal is to feel your feeling. And that's how you do lose weight through it. It's when you make the goal not to feel your authentic feelings is why you have to go eat. And that's why weight loss can't happen. If you cried every time you felt sad about your dad instead of going to get a snack, you wouldn't have any problems losing weight. Hungering enough would be easy. Like, I'm not hungry right now. I'm actually sad. I don't need to keep eating. I need to go spend more time with him. Or I need to make arrangements because I've got to go back to the States. And a part of me wishes I could be here. So I don't have to eat over that because I'm actually just calling it out for what it really is.
Yeah, that's exactly what I needed, because it's like every time, I think about it and I want to cry. Like, I think my main thought, I think the reason why, like, the thought that, like, I showed up like a badass isn't working is because what I really do need is to cry. And my brain's like, we don't cry in this family.
And this is what you tell your brain. It's like, well, you know what? I'm changing the family.
Yeah.
Like, the generation after me will know that it's okay to cry when you're losing your parents. I will teach the next generation by doing it myself of saying, like, you know, there is time and place for this. Like, you can tell yourself that. But this is the other thing, is use the word and. You can feel like a badass. And you can be incredibly sad that your father is declining rapidly. It's like when my grandmother was dying, both of my grandparents had terrible, terrible end life stages. My grandmother had stomach cancer. I thought at the time that stomach cancer was like the worst cancer to have. She's like on TPN for 6 months. Like, just it was vile watching him. He held on for a long time. And couldn't eat, and he loved to eat. The one thing he loved the most in the world was taken away. Couldn't smoke, couldn't, like, all his vices were like taken away by stomach cancer. Then he had to just live there and just die slowly for it took him about 8 months. And he was in the hospital most of the time, and we took care of him. And then my grandmother had pancreatic cancer, which is awful, awful. And we're the kind of family that if you're in the hospital, you're never left alone for 1 minute. Somebody's with you 24/7 because I won't even go into it. But anyway, so I was always the night shift for both my grandparents. And I remember being so proud of myself for, you know, taking care of them. I was work like when I was taking care of my grandfather, I was sleeping in a chair in a hospital room every single night. And then getting up and going to work in the morning and working all day, and then trying to date Chris at the same time. And we had like a 2 hour window that we could see each other every day. And that was my life for like 8 months. Then, when my grandmother Logan was little, and I slept on the floor in her room because she was like your dad. She soiled herself all the time. She had to have around the clock care and all kinds of stuff. And I was so proud of showing up. And so devastated they were dying. Like, I could be proud of me and be a granddaughter in pain. So I just want you to think about, it's like in your brain, it's either I think about this in an amazing way or I feel like a shit show. And it's like you get to have both.
Yeah, that's exactly what I needed to figure out. Yeah, because my brain was totally like, thinking that the one thought was going to make the pain go away. But you're right. Like, that's not like,
If
it's
you
okay
love,
to feel that way. Like, it's perfectly normal.
well, and I assume you love your dad or you wouldn't be having all this pain.
Yeah.
There's no thought coming that will make losing your father easy, joyful, happy, positive. There will be thoughts that will give you a soft resting place when you're in pain. Like, I love him so much. That's why I feel this way. I am doing my best. And sometimes I wish I could do more. Or sometimes I wish it wasn't happening to him. That's all. It's just all normal. So you get to kind of have both. It's like you don't have to only feel the pain, But you don't have to only feel the good or you're doing it wrong either. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. I know this is not an easy time, so we'll all be thinking of you. Take prayers. I'm sure
Thank
any of
you.
our prayer warriors will pray to the heavens open.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you, Erica. All right. We're going to get out of here as there's no more hands raised and no questions. And we have a maintenance call that is starting at 12. I believe it's 12:30. Let me just make sure. Yep, it's at 12:30. So if you are in maintenance, now anybody gets to come to this call. So you do not have to be in maintenance, but I want to talk to anybody who's in maintenance who would love to get coached. And we'll be doing that at 12:30 with me. And then between now and then, I am going to record at least 7 of your Corinne 365s for August. That is my promise. And I do really good at meeting deadlines when I publicly announce them. So just a little hack for all of you that sometimes you promise something that you don't feel like doing out loud to other people, it triggers your brain to be like, well, I don't want to let them down. And I'm like, I'm going to use that hack today. So I'll see y'all at 12:30. Bye, y'all.